There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
And that was Alice in Chains. What a classic.
Local
town.
Legends. What I hear they're pretty good.
They are. And yeah. They're going to be playing at halftime.
Yeah, that'll be pretty cool, actually.
Doesn't that just bring you back to freshman year of college, playing Guitar Hero and into the wee hours of the night?
It does. It does. I grew up in Philly, and I was only about 20 miles from home. Everyone on my floor got sick the week of finals, and everybody went home.
Really?
Except for me. So I sat there and studied, and for like a week and a half straight, just studied and played Guitar Hero, and Them Bones was, I think tier three.
I think it was.
I want to say.
I think it was tier three.
Couldn't play that Ozzy song, Bark at the Moon. Couldn't play it.
You couldn't do that?
Couldn't beat it. Couldn't play it.
Oh my gosh. That was a good one. There were some great songs on that Guitar Hero, but we're really sounding very young right now. And that's not Bob McGinn. You might not recognize the voice there.
Well, there was some Cheap Trick on there, if I remember.
Cheap
Trick?
Yes.
Some older groups that our older fans may be aware of.
Okay. It's very eclectic, I'd say. Very eclectic.
I agree.
And these guys are going to be playing at halftime of the NFC Championship game. Tomorrow, we are looking out the window now, right? At downtown Seattle.
Yes. The Camlin, which I think is a hotel.
Is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's outside, though.
But Bob is in flight. Couldn't do a podcast this week, but we heard from you loud and clear. We have to get one in before the game, so hopefully you're able to catch it. Before the game begins, Dan, you've probably seen him on our videos, past podcasts. He works for NBC 26 in Green Bay. Thanks for joining.
Of course. Thanks for having me. It was fortunate that I ran into you in the lobby while you were frantically looking for anyone to do a podcast with.
I was. You
know, I stepped up and I said, I'll be that man.
I was going to have a homeless guy here in Seattle join me.
He's probably doing a little lot of that in Seattle now that it's legal.
A lot of homelessness here.
A lot of homelessness. Actually, while I was purchasing a deli sandwich, a man walked up and asked if I could buy him some bread.
Really?
He did.
Hmm.
I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I had things to do.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Big game.
Sure.
Big.
Football.
Big game this weekend. So I came out here Tuesday night in Seattle, been covering the Seahawks this week, and you as well. You came out pretty soon.
Yeah,
Wednesday.
Wednesday we were here, although we weren't in the locker room until Thursday, but still plenty of time to get some impressions on how they run things here.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different, and I think it kind of starts with the head coach, right? I mean, it's a...
When meeting with the media, he's a funny guy. He made a joke on you, actually, the
other
day. Yeah. Tyler was scribbling notes frantically before Pete Carroll presser. Pete just looks over his shoulder and goes, I'm not going to answer that question.
He did.
Scared you half to death.
He did. I ran away. No, but no, they, and I wrote about this week, is they just really let players be themselves here. And for better or worse, I mean, that can be a house of cards situation. It almost was this year through all the midseason drama that they had with the Percy Harvin trade. And
yeah,
before that, a lot of suspensions. But
well, you wrote about the Harvin thing. I think is interesting because they were 3-3 at one point. They lose to Kansas City to go 6-4. And Pete Carroll made a statement earlier that said, you know, that could end up being the game that turned their season around. And you wrote a little bit about this. I believe it went out on Friday. How some players were upset with the lack of transparency after that trade,
right.
Which is interesting because really all they have there is transparency.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of why it caught some people off guard. But there definitely was a divide in that locker room with Percy Harvin, with Russell Wilson. It seemed like maybe people were taking sides. I don't know. We're not out there. We just see the reports like everybody else. But anyways, I mean, they have personalities in there. They draft a certain way. They take chances. Bruce Irvin, I mean, he dropped out of high school with selling drugs at one point of his life.
Wow.
Marshawn Lynch obviously had all his problems in Buffalo, is the hit and run incident and the concealed weapon. So they took those chances normal teams don't. They let players be themselves. I tell you what, speaking freely this week, holy cow. I mean, they were not holding back at every corner of that locker room, really.
No, I mean, you look at some of the quotes that came out this week and a lot of your articles and other articles around, it's not Green Bay. I'll tell you that much. There's a centralized message in Green Bay, and they stick to it. And they rarely ever have anybody go against it. The last person to really speak his mind freely, I feel like, is Jermichael Finley. Since then, everyone's very much company line is the way I would describe it. And I'm not afraid to say it that way because that's really what it is. Here in Seattle, there are agendas everywhere.
Yeah.
And they talk about it freely and they let them be themselves. I think you see that on the field too.
So you have...
Not to say that it's any better or worse than the Packers because obviously the Packers are good.
Exactly. And I think that's the point too. There's no right or wrong here. Right, Dan? I mean, there's no right or wrong. There's no... Everybody should just shut up and do their job. No, everybody should just go off the handle and say whatever they want. Different things work for different people. I think a lot of it, too, is the region of the country. I mean, and the fans and the people in that area. I mean, we're out here in Washington. It's different world than it is in middle America.
It wouldn't play the same way in Wisconsin. Right, and it wouldn't play the same way if they didn't back it up. They could be loud as they want, but if they weren't 6-10, nobody would care.
But they back it up.
Right.
They tell you that they're going to kick your butt and they just go out and do it.
Yeah.
That being said, all right, so let's kind of review what's been said out here. Now you had Michael Bennett saying that, yeah, we're the best defense of this era.
Right.
Also,
you had Bobby Wagner saying that you can't throw on them, you can't run on them, so bring it, for the most part. I'm paraphrasing.
Exactly. And you had Cliff Averill. I told him, look, Derek Sherrod's not going to be on the field this time. And he kind of chuckled and said, yeah, we know that, but we fully expect to get Aaron Rodgers. We fully expect to hit him, get our hits in, and go from there. So it's a confidence. It's a palpable confidence that maybe borders on cocky, but it works for them. They win. That's the way they play. It's their style. And I think, you know, here in CenturyLink Field with that crowd behind them, you have to be worried if you're Green Bay.
It doesn't work in middle America, like you said, but I like it. Mm-hmm. I like the brashness of a football team that goes out and says they're going to punch you in the face, and then after they do it, they tell you about it.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that that's a confidence you don't see often. And yeah, it's misconstrued as cockiness a lot. And yeah, like you said, they sort of blur the lines a little bit. But I would prefer that to the way the Packers do it. But the Packers clearly have a culture in place with Mike McCarthy. They follow it to a T. They have strong leadership. And they continue to produce too. It's sort of different strokes for different folks.
Exactly. I mean, in Green Bay, you know, you might say something and get a tap on the shoulder from somebody the next day.
That's true.
They don't get that tap on the shoulder here, but then...
For the beat writers, they can say whatever they want. In Seattle, we have to go through a three-ring circus to get anybody to talk to on camera.
Get those TV cameras out of there.
That's what they want. They don't want us in there because we stir things up, Tyler.
Well, all right. Let me just make this final point. You know, I think with the way Green Bay does business, and it's not quite New England, although I'm not in New England.
No.
I don't think it's to that extreme. They have won multiple division championships.
Right.
And made
so something's working.
5-6 years in a row. So, right. Something's working. It works for them. Seattle's way of doing business around there works for them. And now they're going to play here in Seattle. Let's talk football, right? What's the first key to the game? What jumps out, Dan? What are you going to be looking for?
I want to look and see how the Packers' offense makes an adjustment off of their offense. This Randall Cobb in the backfield thing came out against New England, came out last week with a very limited Rodgers, came out against Detroit with a very limited Rodgers. He's not better. So let's throw that out the window. He's not 100%, he's not 90%, he's not 80%. And the Seahawks know it. Richard Sherman talked at length the other day about Cobb playing in the backfield. Mm-hmm. So then where does Mike McCarthy go from here? I don't think he runs out the same formation. I think you're going to have to continue to see the unscouted looks that he talks about all the time. What new wrinkle can they build upon Cobb in the backfield to get favorable matchups? Because the Seahawks, as we know, they line up and play their football. And they're not necessarily a matchup-based defense. They're a do-your-assignment defense.
Right.
So how then do they progress off of that look, which has been so beneficial to them? Because when the Packers have stalled the last month, where do? They go to Cobb in the backfield.
Right.
He can run, he gets matchups against linebackers, and he's shifty enough to beat third corners. What do they do off of that?
Well, then here's the problem with Seattle. They have people who can run everywhere on defense. I mean, their linebackers can cover Cam Chancellor, I mean, he's 232 pounds. You see that hit he had on Mike Tolbert. Well, he can do that and cover and jump over an offensive line. Athletes everywhere. I guess if I'm Green Bay in this matchup, and you look at the last two times they came out here, 2012, I know it was a long time ago, but Aaron Rodgers gets sacked 8 times in the first half, and what did Cedric Benson have? 2 carries in the first
Something
half?
Something like that. I think he finished with under 40 yards in the entire game.
Just completely abandoned. Well, they finally gave him the ball in the second half and got back into it a little bit, but you have to slow down that pass rush somehow. So they did kind of learn from that lesson. They just didn't run the ball well earlier this year.
Well, Eddie Lacy gets a concussion, too, late in that game. He has to leave. Starks is not a guy who's going to pound the ball. He's a slasher. I think Starks ended up with more yards than Lacy. Lacy had 34. Starks had 37, I think. So, right. I mean, collectively, yeah, it's over 70 yards. But individually, they really couldn't get anything going.
And look, their run game has come a long way since then.
Yeah.
And I think that Green Bay really does have a fighting chance because of this offensive line and the attitude that they've been playing with. And Eddie Lacy, I mean, for a good month, he just really wasn't himself. He was hesitant, maybe not seeing the cutback laying on at the time. He is himself, although he's working through that sore knee. We'll see if that affects him. We've kind of been in our Seattle world out here, but that could be a factor. And maybe you see some James Starks. And then you put on top of that the fact that Aaron Rodgers is not going to be the Aaron Rodgers that we saw midseason with that
catch. I think a huge adjustment, or I shouldn't say adjustment, just advancement, and you mentioned the offensive line, the growth of David Bakhtiari has been really big. Last year he got pushed around some as a rookie, put on a lot of good weight in the offseason. And he's been solid at left tackle. And whenever Brian Bulaga is there, since he came back from his concussion and his torn MCL week one, he's just solidified the edge too. You see J.C. Treader come in, what happens? Mike McCarthy took, I shouldn't say credit, blame for not giving him help against Mario Williams and losing that football game in Buffalo. But whenever those five are in, that continuity is extremely strong. And they're running the ball at will. You mentioned Lacy. He's got, since the Minnesota game back on the 23rd of November, 200-yard games, a 99-yard game, a 97-yard game, and a 98-yard game. If he can churn out similar production, add a score, catch a couple balls, he's averaging probably 2 or 3 catches a game in that same span, they got a chance. They got to control the clock. They can't score, you know, in a minute 30, 2 minutes like they did in the middle of the season against the Bears, against the Eagles. They need to hold on to the ball.
It's a prideful unit. I mean, we talked to that offensive line a lot in there, and, man, they are very prideful. This is the kind of environment, the kind of game that they've been waiting for. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's anybody that gets sick and tired of hearing about this team being, quote-unquote, finesse this point of the season, the last 3 years, it's them up front. So this is the game where you go out and say, look, we are different. You know, when you talk about the Green Bay Packers, talk about this team differently. This is a game, this is that prove-it kind of game. And David Bakhtiari, you mentioned him in the run game. That's a great example. I thought T.J. Lang made a good point where, look, a lot of left tackles around the NFL, you know, the guys that get paid a lot of money, the highest paid players at that position, I mean, they're primarily pass protectors.
They're shielders,
They're shielders. They're big, tall, strong guys. They're not going to give up a sack, but they're not going to get to that second level in the run game and help push the pile where maybe that's Bakhtiari's best quality is providing a little something extra. Little edge in the run game.
He's, I think, hanging out with Lang and Sitton has really helped him. He's developed an edge. I mean, we see it in the locker room. You see it on the field against Dallas. There was a shoving match, and you saw, I don't remember who it was, jumped on Bakhtiari, just threw him right to the ground. I mean, that's the edge they need. I mean, Lang's a guy who's going to stir it up. He's a grinder, as Larry McCarron likes to call him. Mm-hmm. But that's what they need. They need guys who are going to do that.
So it's strength for strength, Dan. I mean, the Seattle front four, they don't blitz. They're able to get home themselves. They don't even have one player with more than 7 sacks. But when they're on, they're on. And it might be the best pass rush in the NFL. I mean, Michael Bennett, he can play outside and inside. Cliff Averill, he's still as good of a pass rush as he's ever been. Different types. And Bruce Irvin, I mean, the linebacker, they get him down in that kind of quirky wide stance. And he gets after it. So different pass rush.
Watch. For the number of stunts and how they're stunting. Because the Packers this season have been good at picking up stunts. There was an instance last week when Corey Linsley got taken through the spin cycle on a stunt and gave up a sack. But other than that, they've been very solid against 4-man rushers, 3-man rushers, as most offensive line against 3 are. But the 4-man rush has not worked of late. Teams have had to come after Rodgers. So that's another sort of chess match to see how Dan Quinn and, you know, the defensive staff adjusts if they can't get there with 4 like they have been all year.
And are they just ultra aggressive? I mean, do they just
I can't believe the Cowboys didn't come after Rodgers. I know that's not really in their DNA either, but you see a guy who can't move. He's unwilling really to scramble. There were several times where he had alleys to go and he just couldn't go. So I have to imagine at some point they have to send somebody.
Well, and if you're so confident in Richard Sherman and Byron Maxwell, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Jeremy Lane.
Why not?
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you send somebody when the quarterback's hobbling? I mean, I think maybe that's something that the wrench that Seattle kind of throws into this game. Just while we're on Michael Bennett in this pass rush, he kind of got went on a little bit of a rant in the locker room amongst other rants. He's definitely the most colorful personality in there. Holy cow. About sacks. And he said, quote, "Show me all the guys who got the sacks that are playing right now. They're all at home. You've got your J.J. Watt. You've got your Mario Williams, Connor Barwins. Who else you got? They're all sitting at home right now watching us play. Obviously, sacks aren't that important. It's about winning. It's all that matters, how you win the game. All stats are for the media. You can all go out there, play fantasy football, and say one guy's better than the other guy." He went on to say that, I don't know if I have it up here, basically, the young players today, they just care about their Twitter and their Instagram. Everybody's about themselves. We could care less. So his point being that they do play very sound team defense, and they don't have one guy that had a lot of sacks this year, but, boy, you watch that Carolina game, and they were in Cam Newton's face all night, and it was always somebody different.
Two observations. He sounds like he's 50 with a comment like that.
Well, he also said last week that he was on No Sex Wednesday with his wife, and that it was No Sex Thursday.
You mentioned that. Maybe you can elaborate on that.
So
maybe you can elaborate on that. I don't know. It's a family pod. If you don't want to hear about No Sex Wednesday, fast forward to the 15-minute mark of this podcast.
And apparently, it was No Sex Thursday for Michael Bennett this week. Yeah. So he was more focused on Thursday in his preparation. Apparently,
I don't blame him.
Okay. What were you going to say?
My other observation, other than he sounds like he's really old, is that's one of the best quotes I think I've ever heard. Yeah. They're all sitting at home. Similar to what you've said about your Twitter followers. It's a little different. But.
Well, no, hey, I'm all for my Twitter followers, Dan. You know
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's an incredible quote, and it just happens to be true. I mean, it's not true every year, but it just so happens that that's the case this year. They're the perfect team defense. I mean, Earl Thomas is a guy who's incredibly serious. I think we both learned that this week. Guy takes his job really serious. And he was at the podium the other day talking about how much he loves his teammates. Mm-hmm. How everyone in the defensive room, they love each other. They fight for each other. And you may think it's cliche. It's a team-building thing. But then he was asked a follow-up question about how you don't hear football players talking about loving one another. And he said, well, I'm not the stereotypical football player that you've pigeonholed me into. None of us are. We're all different. We're all individuals, and we embrace that, and we love each other for it. And that's what it takes to be a cohesive unit, a cohesive team, and I think they've got it in spades.
Yeah, we did hear that a lot this week. And in the secondary, I mean, Earl Thomas, Chancellor, all these guys, they played so young, and Pete Carroll put them out there
rookies,
and they came up together, and they made a ton of mistakes. He even said that Earl Thomas, I mean, he was giving up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of yards, you know, putting himself in the wrong position all the time. But in time, he learned from it, and now he very rarely ever seems to take a misstep.
I mean, you look at the construction of the secondary. Chancellor's, what, a fourth-round pick? Third-round pick? Sherman's a fifth-round pick? Thomas is a first-round pick? Maxwell's not a high pick?
Yeah.
So you've got a combination of guys around the same age, with the exception of Thomas, who have that chip on their shoulder, and they play like it.
So if you're looking at this defense, and you're Green Bay, where's the weakness, Dan? Where do you think you have an advantage?
That's a great question. I think if they had more of an established tight end who could work the middle, I know Corliss has had a decent last couple games. He played well against the Cowboys. I would say you attack up the middle. You try to get behind Bobby Wagner, right? You try to attack there. You got to get the ball to Jordy. Mm-hmm. If Sherman, you have to attack Sherman. There's no way you can shut off half the field and really think the Packers can win this game. I think they can. If they can run the ball effectively enough, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, there's not one particular spot that says, there's the weakness, let's go after it. Because we saw they tried to go after Maxwell in week one. It really didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't. They threw to Nelson 14 times, and his longest reception went for 16 yards. Maxwell had the big interception off the tip ball. So, he's a good cornerback himself, and they kind of say he's a big technician. I guess if you're Green Bay and you look at Randall Cobb, he's the one player where play to play just brings that creativity, whether he's playing inside, outside, in the backfield, wherever. And he didn't really do much at all. I think it was Jeremy Lane covered him a lot that game. Remember in September, kind of took Cobb a while to really get that burst.
Well, he's a different player now than he was.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Then. You know, that Bears game in Chicago was a big turning point for him to get that burst back, and then he did it again against Carolina. That Randall Cobb is what they really have to take advantage of, because he's not going to draw Sherman or Maxwell. I mean, he can get some of those more advantageous matchups wherever else he is on the field. And also, Kevin Williams, I mean, what, 12 or 13-year vet, 12 years, 34 years old, has done a lot of good things for them at moving to nose tackle, a new position. But that's not Brandon Mebane. I mean, maybe they're able to kind of go up the middle that rushing game a little bit. But we're stretching here.
Lindsley and Sitton have done a great job of combo blocking all year. We're fortunate enough to work with Larry McCarron, where we get the All-22 tapes. So I watch them most weeks, and you know that's their strongest combo blocking unit between Lindsley and Sitton. So if they're able to do that and get second level, I think they have a chance. I want to go back to Cobb real quick. His season arc, his story arc, I think is so interesting, because he didn't have an impressive training camp. He didn't have an impressive first couple of games of the season. I had a conversation with a member of the organization. They weren't sure if he was confident enough coming off that broken leg. They thought maybe that he had mentally lost it a little bit. After the Detroit game, what did he say? He stood up and said, "This was embarrassing. I'm embarrassed. I need to look in the mirror and make it happen."
Yeah.
And that really was the turning point. After that, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me. I don't know exactly the stats for the next game, but he's been a completely different player. And confidence goes such a long way when you're just playing in general, especially as a wide receiver position where you're the GOAT as quickly as, you know, you're the king. I think he lost a lot of that confidence, but now that they're using him in so many different ways, he had 90-plus catches, 1,000-plus yards, 10 touchdowns in a contract year. He's got a swagger to him now that makes him a tough matchup.
And he is tough. I mean, boy, you ask Edgar Bennett about him, the wide receiver coach, that's the first thing he always says, is that people don't talk about this guy's toughness, grit. When you catch a ball over the middle, you know you're going to get hit. Boy, he's going to need that against Seattle.
Yeah.
Chancellor, that's a really good point, observation, and what you heard there, Dan. I mean, so it took him a little while to get going and to have that confidence, and you can see it on the field.
Well, if you look at him, even his build, he's not a big guy to begin with. Small legs, decent build, not a huge guy, our height. After he came back, he had lost a lot of muscle mass. So in that Chicago game, that playoff game, you could see it on him. He just wasn't as big. Obviously, in the offseason, he gets back up to his normal size or whatever. I don't think he had a confident training camp, and I think it bled into the season, and then something clicked in his mind. I mean, maybe it's as simple as the contract year, and he snaps out of it and starts, you know, doing his work. He'll never tell us, obviously.
Well, JerMichael Finley kind of went through the same thing. You know, he had a couple contract years. I mean, had the neck injury in a contract year, but before that, before he signed that 2-year deal, I mean, he was really honest in saying how much he was pressing, and it's on your mind. I mean, look, this is a job for these people. I mean, there are millions of dollars at stake in any player in a contract year. It can go one of two ways.
Well, especially for Cobb. Nelson's coming off a below market value, but he's still making a couple million a year. Now he makes a lot more. Cobb's making second round pick money.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between this year's salary and next year's salary is completely different.
Yeah, they're going to need him, though. I mean, he's got to be big in this moment, in this game, because that's one player that maybe you get him in a good matchup and take advantage of it.
I think he has to play one of the best games of his career for them to win.
On the flip side, Seattle, let's break down the Seahawks offense a little bit now. Traditionally, I mean, this is a run-first team, and the last 3 years, no team has rushed for more yards, and it's not even close. But, you know, as good as Marshawn Lynch is, and they broke 17 tackles in that opener, Russell Wilson, I mean, this offense has evolved over the last month and a half, where they're putting more on the quarterback's shoulders, a lot more just basic 3-5-step drops, getting the ball out. Teams have tried to blitz Wilson, and he's made them pay. He's a different quarterback. I mean, his bread and butter will always be running to throw and scrambling, and they have design scrambles and all of that. But he's a very multi-layered quarterback right now. I think if I'm Green Bay, he's almost your first focus in trying to figure out what he's going to be doing any given play.
You know, he threw for over 3,000 yards this year, but something a lot of people probably don't know is he was 16th in the NFL in rushing yards this year, ahead of half of the league, and they're a leading rusher. Of course, Marshawn Lynch was fourth, so it tells you how often they run the ball and how effectively they run it. Six scores to go along with it.
Yeah.
He said the other day, I'm just trying to get down. He's lying. He's doing something really well. You mentioned how the offense has evolved. Last year, how much of it was give it to Marshawn, let him carry us, and then we'll make a playoff of it.
Right.
This year, Wilson's the table setter.
And into the postseason, Wilson really wasn't playing that great. I mean, he wasn't passing the ball that effectively up to the Super Bowl, and he had some big third downs against Denver, but...
Well, you got plays like Jermaine Kearse breaking five tackles before he scores touchdowns, too. That helps the quarterback's line.
And as a runner, I mean, we all talked about his height, you know, before the draft, yeah. And all these NFL teams questioned it up and down. He goes in the third round, whatever. 5'10", what is he, 215... His size helps him as a runner.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about his size and how much it hurts him as a passer, but it helps him as a runner. I mean, they say he does squats all the time in the offseason. Very strong legs.
I don't know how he does it.
I don't like squats. I
hate squats.
Oh. Yeah, you're a big power
lifter. No loading of the back for me anymore.
Okay, that's right. Herniated disc.
Yeah. Two.
Two herniated
discs.
Oof. But he also does have big hands. 10 1/8 hands, I believe. So they're big, strong hands, strong lower body, and he doesn't take that kill shot. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He knows how to kind of avoid that big collision, when they slide exactly, when to get out of bounds. You get the yardage he needs to. He's going to be a problem for Green Bay. Of these four quarterbacks left, he's just so different than Luck, Brady, and Rodgers.
Well, he's not a Kaepernick kind of runner, which obviously has given the Packers problems. He's a craftier runner, I would say. So what do? Do you spy him with Clay? Because they tried it with Kaepernick and it didn't work.
Dayton Jones talked about that on Monday. He said, look, when we played Kaepernick, we spied. It was more of a containment type of mindset where you're not just flying upfield to get after him.
Yeah, stay in your lane.
And he rushed for 100 yards anyways. So, yeah, that's where it gets difficult here because right now, what's Green Bay's defense doing better than anything else? They're getting after the quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's coming from several different sources.
Well, let me ask you, is this the game they signed Julius Peppers for?
Oh, yeah, this is absolutely the game. This is why you bring in Julius Peppers. He's going to have to make another DeMarco Murray-like play for Green Bay to win this game. You would have to think.
I meant more from like a craftiness, spying standpoint, athleticism standpoint. Did they bring him in knowing they're going to have to go through quarterbacks in this conference who can move?
I think the key is Clay Matthews. I mean, whether he's inside or outside, you know that he's got the speed, athleticism, all of that to stay pace with Russell Wilson. And he's also somebody who can spy and can get upfield if you want that play to play. They're just going to have to figure out when can you pin your ears back and when do you have to spy and be cognizant of him as a runner. You can't just go man-to-man
and
leave nobody there. Somebody's got to know what he's doing every play.
Well, I think that's one of the more interesting matchups in this game. You've got a secondary that's played well this season. Shields, Tremont. Clinton Dix has come on and played pretty well for a rookie. Then, of course, you have Burnett against three undrafted guys in Norwood, who's, a fifth-round pick? So is that conceivably what Dom Capers may do? Play not so much coverage, but try to keep him in front. Limit the big gains from Marshawn Lynch. Get after him. A lot of bodies around him so he doesn't break any more tackles and then really come after Wilson. I don't know because, you know, we talked to B.J. Raji. If you remember, 2 years ago in San Fran, they didn't make any adjustments against Kaepernick when he tore him up.
Right.
And Raji was asked about it, and he said, you should ask our defensive coordinator about adjustments. He threw him under the bus a little bit. What happens now? Do they go away from a game plan?
Boy, and to me, that's where it gets a little scary for Green Bay because that Carolina game, Russell Wilson converts 8 of 8 third downs, 7 of them for first downs.
Threw for almost 200 yards on third down.
199, 3 touchdowns, and you look at those plays – there was the one touchdown to Doug Baldwin. He sees that he's going to get blitzed on both sides. He's got Thomas Davis coming to his right, a safety coming to his left. He kind of does this little audible, kind of shaking his eyes like he's got goggles on or something. And Doug Baldwin has a one-on-one with the safety. He puts it precisely where it has to be. Baldwin makes a great play. If you're a defense, you just throw your arms up at that point because that's probably what you want. I mean, you don't want Russell Wilson, the runner, beating you. You don't want Marshawn Lynch, the tackle breaking phenom, beating you. You want a wide receiver named Doug Baldwin or Jermaine Kearse or Ricardo Lockett or Kevin Norwood beating you in one-on-one coverage. And they've been doing it. They've been doing it more of late. I know that these receivers are, I mean, Doug Baldwin, he's 5'10", and boy, walking around in the locker room next to him, and they feel like we look down on him. He's not a big guy, and he's the number one receiver. But they're tough, they're gritty. They try to really seek a certain type of wide receiver that makes clutch catches, and they've been doing it of late.
I know, and you wrote a story about the undrafted guys, and Russell Wilson has asked this week if he believes in that gene, the clutch gene, if people are able to do that. He said, absolutely. Guys who play big in big moments don't have to run for 1,000 yards. They don't have to catch for 1,000 yards. They don't need 1,000 receiving yards. Can you make the play in the moment? The Seahawks have shown over the last 2 years, and I would even argue the year they lost to Atlanta, where their defense had a rare meltdown, they took the lead in that game 28-27 with 2 minutes to go. So this is a team that's used to playing big in big moments, and I don't think the cachet of a particular player's name matters to them at all.
Right. They definitely – I know they kind of feed off of it. I mean, we're sitting here. All players have the quote unquote chip on the shoulder, right? I mean,
unless you're a top 10 pick, I guess it's tough.
They still have it too. But
nine teams passed me over, Tyler.
These three guys were undrafted. I mean, their top three receivers were not even drafted. There's something real. There's a real edge. Okay. Do you want to get into some questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Kurt G, he asks, first game was the result of a Derek Sherrod disaster. He spells Derek, D-E-R-R-O-K.
Sure.
Quad defense, inside linebackers. Tomorrow game will be different. He predicts a win. Anything you want to take out of that tweeted all day?
Well, it was a statement, not a question. So I appreciate the statement. That's something, against the Cowboys, maybe I'm just losing my mind. They brought the NASCAR back. It had been a while since we had seen that, I thought. The first two third downs, they brought NASCAR. They sacked Romo once, and then there was the Brad Jones penalty on the other one.
Probably when Seattle sees that, that's when they go to Marshawn Lynch, you would think.
You would think.
You would think. Okay, Brandon Miller. He asks, any chance do we see shotgun split back formation with Randall Cobb and Eddie Lacy in the backfield? I think you do see Randall Cobb in the backfield, or whatever the alignment is. That's something that helped him really take advantage of what New England was doing, and what a comparison there from the way they attacked Sherman and the Seattle secondary to how they attacked New England with Revis. I mean, Mark McCarthy, you could say he out-coached Bill Belichick that game. He figured out how to get his receivers in positions to make plays, and they did.
I was surprised at how simplistic that was. Take away Jordy, try to take away Cobb. Once Devontae Adams starts doing it, he's trying to take him away, but you leave Cobb, on a one-on-one matchup. I thought that was an interesting adjustment. Yeah, I mean, you just kind of have the chess match is always what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to decide the game. That may be easy for anyone to say. Of course, adjustments decide the game. But Mike McCarthy hasn't always been willing to make adjustments. And he said it. When they needed to run the football, he wants to throw the football. He's an offensive guy. He wants to pile up yards. He wants to pile up points. But sometimes he even has said he needs to swallow his ego and run the football. So how that progresses is something to watch.
Good point. This one from Scott Wethall. He says, is there any chance Brad Jones is inactive for the game?
Well, I tell you what, healthy scratch? Or
he got that penalty on Twitter. I mean, I thought the internet might just die at Lambeau Field.
For a part-time player, we hear his name a lot.
I believe that's six penalties, and he was in the doghouse for a good chunk of the season. We didn't play on defense. And he's a part-time player. Yeah, I mean, I saw some people trying to make the point, well, if he didn't hold the running back there, it could have been a touchdown. I mean, that's a lame excuse.
It's hard to say.
But just put yourself in position so you don't have to hold.
Yeah.
I know he's peeling back there, but you're the dime linebacker. You're out there for your athleticism for that play. He's got to make the play. And, yeah, it's been a rough go. I think that he probably still is their dime linebacker. I don't think that they just magically changed something for this game.
I think they would be hard-pressed to do so. Is Sam Barrington athletic enough to be the dime linebacker? More so than Hawk, obviously. You don't want Clay there because you want him rushing and dime. Is Barrington quick enough? His storyline is strange, too. They threw him in there. The Saints were his first start. Played okay. Then he was not starting. Then he comes back and he starts playing like gangbusters. Who else can you put in there? I mean, when I'm hanging Christmas lights in my house, I call that Brad Jones pad level. When I'm on a ladder, standing as tall as I can.
Ooh.
The guy has played higher than anyone I've ever seen in the history of my life watching football.
He has.
Guy stands straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he catches so many blockers?
I will say this. Just play devil's advocate.
Okay.
We need a devil's advocate.
Sure.
I agree with you. But he did make a big tackle.
Make yourself at home. Take some of my gum that's on my desk.
I am going to take this.
Why don't you?
I will. You got a lot of gum in here.
Well, I got a lot of bad breath.
I've noticed. I didn't want to say anything.
Jeez.
Wow.
Two pieces. Good Lord.
He made the tackle before the Dez Bryant play.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big play.
Yeah. It doesn't change how high he plays.
It doesn't, no. He's not had a good season. But I think that overall, Green Bay has kind of realized that they're weaker at inside linebacker. So they've exhausted all of their options. They've got Clay Matthews in there, nickel. They've got Sam Barrington out there now. They've decreased A.J. Hawk snaps. They're obviously going to have to revamp inside linebacker in the offseason. But can they survive? I mean, can all of this be enough to make a Super Bowl run? So far, so good with a huge penalty on Brad Jones.
Here's my thought. I think if the Packers approach this game like it's the Super Bowl, they can win.
What do you mean by that?
If they beat the Seahawks are better than the Colts, definitely. They're better than the Patriots. If they win this game, this is the toughest game they play this year. If they approach this game and throw out everything, they pull out all the stops to win this one game, they can beat both those AFC teams. They've proven they can beat the Patriots. So if they come in and say, this is our Super Bowl, we're not going to be denied, and they pull out a win, I think they win the Super Bowl easily, frankly.
Well, that leads perfectly into Bob O'Connor's question on Twitter.
Okay.
He said he's been listening to Seattle radio all week, and he can't believe how confident they are. Will an underdog mindset help the Packers? I'm sure a lot of our listeners have probably been reading the comments. They have been very confident all week, as we noted earlier. Can Green Bay flip that? Can they turn it, channel it, distribute it, and use it to motivation?
They're certainly not used to being underdogs, that's for sure. I think Julius Peppers is the one giving the pregame speech tomorrow. And last time he gave it, I think it was against Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And he riled everybody up. Not a rah-rah guy, but he got everybody going.
Chicago game, right?
It was a Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay. Got everybody up, and they came out and won that game.
You know, Micah Hyde said after that game, he said it wasn't a matter of if we were going to win or lose. It was how much are we going to win? How much are we going to kill these guys by? And whatever Julius Peppers says, I mean, these guys, they just rave about it. So you have
He's changed that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
He really has.
Another reason that they brought him in for this game. All right, let's get into it. Predictions.
Sure. You want me to start? I'll go for it. You know, as much as I would like to cover a Super Bowl, I don't think it happens. I think this place is too tough to play in. I think Rodgers is too injured. No matter what McCarthy's going to try to do with a hobbled quarterback, and he's hobbled. He didn't practice Saturday. Larry McCarron told us on NBC 26 he only practices on Thursday. I think that's pretty telling. He's just not up to speed. I think Seattle wins. I think they pull away late. And I think it's at least a 14-point game by the time it's all said and done.
Wow, 14-point game.
Yeah.
Going to double the spread.
I am.
I'm with you on that point with Aaron Rodgers. I think that if he was healthy, if he was the guy, for example, the play you saw against Miami when he just that Houdini escape, throws that touchdown to Randall Cobb. Those are the kinds of plays I thought that he'd have to make if they ever played Seattle again here.
Yeah, to win those games.
To win those games where you, A, are able to get away from the rush, and then, B, have the accuracy to somehow just thread the needle to somebody past Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, anybody who's back there. So it's going to be difficult because the windows aren't going to be there. You have to think the rush gets there sooner than Dallas's did. It's going to be tough for Green Bay in this one. I'm not going to say a 14-point game, but I think it might be something like, I think I said 33-21, so not that far off. But it's going to be a difficult one for Green Bay.
But we'll be seeing neon green and blue confetti tomorrow is what you're saying.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. So by the third time,
it would be the third straight year that the Packers end their season against a team they started with.
It would be, wouldn't
yeah.
it? What's the scenario that you see Green Bay winning this game?
That's a good question. If they're able to keep the game in the teens, 20s, if they can, I mean, they've only allowed one team since the bye to score over 21 points. Let's not forget that. The Packers' defense is no pushover. if they can keep the Seahawks below 20 points, special teams becomes a huge factor. Micah Hyde's got two more punt returns for touchdowns this year. They're going to need a great defensive effort. They're going to need one big special teams play, and they're going to need to keep Rodgers upright. That's a lot on a checklist.
Definitely. Those around Aaron Rodgers will need to elevate their play. I mean, they're going to need just a superhuman effort from Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
And they're going to need a turnover or two on defense. So we'll see.
That's another interesting thing. Russell Wilson has only thrown one interception in a loss this year.
Yep.
So even if they are able to turn him over, they just don't make that many mistakes.
Boy, we didn't really give Packer fans much reason for optimism on this podcast, did we?
We're being real. This is a tough game. It's going to be, if they win this game, that will be a bona fide upset in my mind.
Definitely. I mean, this is a very, very buzzsaw atmosphere out here that they haven't
seen. If you haven't been to a game at CenturyLink, you need to see it because it is a very different experience.
It is. All right. Well, hey, well, thanks a lot for listening, everybody. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
I'm
glad we were able to get a podcast in this week.
I'll never be invited back by your listeners.
You met your once a year quota.
Once a year quota. Once a football season. I was on during training camp. When Bob takes off, I'm the first
phone
call.
That's right. How about that? When Bob goes on vacation, we'll bring you back into the fold.
All right. Call him the righty.
Yes. Yes, we will. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.